Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. What I want to do in this session is I want to look at an area that I would hope and expect you would want to come up this summer. And that's the issue of Elizabethan parliaments. You've got three slides in your PowerPoint in front of you. The first shows you how different questions relate to the same key content. The second is an old pre-curriculum reform exam report and examiner guidance. There's a couple of things I want to point out on that. And the third is an essay plan for what is arguably a more awkwardly worded question. Let's put it like that. I intend to spend 10 minutes really on each of those. However, I'm not going to go over the content of Elizabethan parliaments today because they're in your books, but I will attach those notes to this post on the website. I will, however, just pull out a couple of key concepts, and it might be worth you just jotting some of those down as we go through. Okay. Can we have 10 minutes then talking about the place of Parliament within our understanding of Elizabethan England? The first thing really for you guys to write down, I would suggest, is that Parliament can be used in two ways. The first way might be as part of an essay talking about the relative importance of the bodies of Elizabethan government. Cast your mind back to last year and you'll have written that essay along the lines of, quoting Sloane, the council was the indispensable hub of the Elizabethan system of government and you had to contrast it. In that our essay, a paragraph on Parliament would really focus on its three roles. One, to quote G.R. Elton, to be a point of contact on matters of state when asked. Two, to be the centre of legislation. Although we do know, of course, that Elizabeth, through the royal seal, could rule by royal proclamation. And three, to be the place that gives supply or money to the government. That is not what we're talking about today. But one thing I would urge you to write down here is you need to be clear that an essay that's asking about cooperation or conflict is very different from one that's asking about Parliament's place within the system of government. I hope we're all happy with that. Three concepts that I want us to get our heads around. Number one, you need to be happy with the idea of the royal prerogative on matters of state. You must know the difference between matters of state and matters of commonwealth, sometimes written as matters of commonwealth. Two, you must understand the difference between a piece of work like your coursework, which is really exploring historiography, and two, a factor-based essay, which might use the historiography in the introduction. And three, you must be confident of the following terms. I'm going to list them here. You know them, but you must make sure that you know them. You must be happy with ideas such as purveyancy, monopolies, parliamentary privilege, succession. Okay. With that, can I ask you to turn to the first slide, please? And this is the one that gives you five colour-coded parliamentary essays. In the middle, you've got a plan, which extraordinarily is the same plan for all five essays. For the purpose of the recording, I'm going to read it to you. I'm then going to tell you what the great trap is, and then I'm going to focus on how the correct introduction allows you to analyse these. One point to say to you. You need to be clear whether you can write three paragraphs with an introduction and a conclusion, or four in this time. You therefore need to be clear how long you're going to spend writing on the sources in your hour and a half. If you're sitting here and you're fortunate enough to have a bit more time, you might want to gamble with that. Plan that out. Okay, so going from left to right in no particular order, you have, these are all past questions from the old spec. The black question there, this is a general question. It says, how far do you agree that Parliament mostly cooperated with Elizabeth? You've then got the red question here. How far do you agree that parliamentary privilege was the most important cause of disputes between Elizabeth and her parliaments? You've then got the blue question, which says, how far is it correct to suggest that Elizabeth and her ministers effectively controlled Parliament in her reign? You've then got the gold question here. How convincing is the claim that Parliament became more powerful in the reign of Elizabeth? In the middle, you've got what might look like a nightmare. It's fine, trust me. Which was more important in the reign of Elizabeth? The House of Commons or the House of Lords? The extraordinary thing about all of these questions is what they're asking for, and this is worth writing down, is they're asking for a factor-based approach. And those factors come out of the G.R. Elton, John Neill argument about the nature of Elizabeth's relationship with her parliaments. Now, here I come to the big trap, and this is worth writing down. You are not being requested to regurgitate the historiographical debate. You need to understand it, and arguably, you need to use it in your introductions. There are other ways through, but I probably would. But you must write on Parliament factor-based answers. Now, if you look at the bubble in the middle of this image, you will see that there are four areas of conflict. Religion, parliamentary privileges, I've grouped together Mary, marriage and succession, and finance and monopolies. The next thing to note, of course, guys, is each of these is a matter of state. Each of these is an area where Elizabeth would have wanted to defend her royal prerogative. Now, Neill argues that in this period, Elizabeth is successfully challenged in all of these areas. And all of it comes from the issue of religion. And of course, he famously references the Puritan choir. I think that's okay to reference that. And of course, he calls that, doesn't he, an opposition in a significantly new sense. G.R. Elton, his tutee, famously dismisses that, and I quote, as balderdash. At its simplest, Neil is arguing that conflict is the dominant theme of Elizabeth's relationship with her parliaments. And Elton will acknowledge moments of conflict, but will suggest that cooperation is the dominant theme. So, in terms of your revision, using those pages from your booklet, what you have got to be able to do for each of these four issues, by which I mean religion, parliamentary privileges, marriage and succession, finance and monopolies, for each of those, you've got to be able to explain the evidence that Parliament is cooperating, the evidence that Parliament is at conflict, and decide where the balance lies. I will show you now how you can apply that to each of our five questions. But that's your job. And if you look at those pages I've produced for you, really all of the evidence is there. I'm sorry to jump around a little bit, but one thing I would say to you, another trap that people fall into with parliaments is this. They like to quote these historians, and they've got it in their head, I'm not just regurgitating the historiographical debate. But they don't use contemporary evidence. Where you've got that page of hard facts, Elizabeth averaging 33 acts per session, more than any other Tudors, for example, and the examiners are going to be much more interested in that than you quoting Graves or Jones or even Neil or Elton, for that matter. Yeah? In early modern history, yes, of course you can use historians and have opinions about them, but we're really looking for your argument, where possible, supported with contemporary evidence. So, there, for example, there's that figure, isn't there, about the rise in legal training. I think it goes from 1563 to 1593, and it goes, I think, from 26% to 44%. Yeah? That type of evidence is what you would see in an A-grade answer as well. It's also a useful thing to deploy in conclusions. Okay. So, let's have a look at the black question here. How far do you agree that Parliament mostly cooperated with Elizabeth? Well, for this question, you would need to make the point that if there was a Puritan choir challenging Elizabeth on matters of state, such as pushing her into a more extreme Protestant settlement, pushing for free speech, Wentworth and all of that stuff, this be a school of flattery and a house of dissimulation. Pushing Elizabeth so she has to prorogue Parliament in 1566 because it challenges her so repeatedly on marriage. What is it? She described it as an intolerable house. If you're pushing on these things, if you believe that conflict is the dominant theme in all of these things, then Parliament did not mostly cooperate. So the challenge for the A-level student in the exam is to get the introduction right there. If Parliament cooperates with Elizabeth, there's no Puritan choir. We can view Wentworth as A.G.R. Smith calls him, a maverick. The issue over marriage is not tied to a Puritan choir that doesn't exist. And yes, the greatest opposition was, of course, in 1601 over monopolies, but that is not, as John Neil would call it, an opposition in a significantly new sense, one with a positive programme. That's a bunch of guys who are fed up putting their hands in the pockets. I would also